Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, January 26, 2008. Our topic for today is hyperinflation strikes. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. I'm with EIR Economic Section, and I am very glad to introduce and welcome our guests who are part of a very special project and operation, and they are from the LaRouche Youth Movement of the LaRouche Political Action Committee. With me here in the studio, we welcome Megan Beetz.
Hi.
She's in the LaRouche Youth Movement War Room when it comes to coordinating the hour-by-hour actions of the LaRouche Youth Movement in the United States, North America, and friends abroad. And two members of the LaRouche Youth Movement from off-site who are speaking to us from what they could say more about is the Basement Center of Research and Operations. Leona Fanching, welcome.
Hello.
And Michael Kirsch.
Glad to be here.
And the special reason for Leona and Michael, as well as Megan, to be here is that, let's put it this way. Another name for stimulus is hyperinflation. We are in an overstimulated crisis. And we could say that Monday night, when the State of the Union is presented by President Bush, if he were a real person and telling the truth, he would say something like what LaRouche has said in his new paper people should look at on the website of the EIR. That's LaRouchePub.com, or look on the LaRouche Political Action Committee, LaRouchePAC.com. Hyperinflation is here. This economic breakdown. So LaRouche would be saying what he said in the paper. The insane U.S. decision over the past week to launch a stimulus package for the USA economy has committed the USA to its present entry into a new trajectory, that of a hyperinflationary economic breakdown crisis. So the second thing I point out to encourage everyone to look on these two websites is that in the last 24 hours, LaRouche has put out something special in terms of what to do about it. That is, and he calls it How to Defend Your Dollar. That is to be aware that there's method to the madness of some people that are pushing this hyperinflation and chaos and deliberately trying to push a crash of the dollar, especially centered in London. They're not your average dummies. As the chaos grows, they are part of taking advantage of an opportunity to buy up what's left of the U.S. economy on the cheap, like a Walmart fire sale. And LaRouche is discussing in How to Defend Your Dollar what to do about it. In other words, he's adding to the necessary policy called the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, what to do about the interest rates. Raise them. Don't lower them. And we can get to that more. But with this introduction, I want to turn to Michael and Leona. And in terms of their work, they provided a special package. I've just read it and looked at the cartoons in what's going to back up LaRouche's paper on hyperinflation. And why don't you start the dialogue anyway about what's necessary to conceptualize a real economy these days instead of this madness?
Well, the first thing is you have to realize you're not a wolf or some kind of fox. We're better as a wolf per se, because they work in packs. But the first thing is obviously to remember that you have a human mind which is capable of change, and that's something that these dupes in the around Bernanke and God forbid our president right now have forgotten. But by way of introduction, I'd say that we have initiated and begun some research in the past few days on a special project, because on Tuesday of this week, Lyndon LaRouche initiated that we must immediately become very sober about the world situation, that we've got this action by the Fed to lower interest rates by 0.75% as sort of an emergency action that they took. Represented that we had initiated, but the same action, the same process, the same quality of thinking, and with the same intended outcome that that happened in Weimar Germany in 1923, a few years after the official end of World War One, and that because of the way we are situated in the world right now, with Europe in under the shackles of the post 1992 Maastricht agreements, Maastricht Treaty, Stability Pact, as it's called, which enforces no spending of governments for infrastructure projects. Only a few percent of the GDP of the nation can there be accumulated in debt. And combined with the fact that the British have gone completely insane and they're ready to take down the world with them, only the United States stands as a nation which is capable, if we make the drastic change in our thinking of economics, can the world as a whole have a chance, any chance whatsoever, in reversing this policy? And so, the first thing is this action by the Fed. And the action is coming in the context, obviously, of LaRouche has initiated this, to come out and say, as of yesterday now, to up the ante on what he's calling for, that the Fed must raise interest rates, because there's a coordinated action going on to destroy the United States, destroy the U.S. dollar, and open the way for some kind of crisis or some kind of a state of affairs which would allow the United States, would put the United States population into a state where they would call or be subject to allowing for some kind of Bloomberg Schwarzenegger type operation that would come in and say, you know, everything's screwed up, we're in a crisis, and this can't be handled by normal measures. So we're the guys to fix it. So in light of this direction that we're going in, we have pulled together and we'll be continuing to pull together a picture of what exactly this hell that was unleashed in Germany in 1923 looked like, and what this is going to look like on a world scale, and how the intention in both cases is the same, how this thing is elaborated the same. And right now I just say also, I know that people who are listening to this, if you call in to the number that Marshall will give, you'll get a copy of the latest issue of EIR, in which the research we've done over the last week, along with Mr. LaRouche's essay on hyperinflation, will be available. And ours is under the title "Fed Action: Repeat of Weimar Germany." Yes, that is a stimulus package, and no, I'm not happy to see you. That's why
I better give that number right away. 800. 800-929-7566. And also watch the websites in the next 48 hours, I would say, Michael. For this, the Federal Reserve copies Weimar hyperinflation.
Oh, yeah. The website? I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, remember, I'll put in a plug. The EIR online will have this. That is LaRouchePub.com by January 29. Okay. Thank you. Now, the thing is, do you want to say more about the first round you discussed, pulling together this picture on the lessons of the 1923 period and what led up to this inflation? I think your package even says the ink was practically still wet on the Reichsmarks. They couldn't print them fast enough. You were quoting people from that period.
Yeah, the best way to look at this is to take it from a process all the way back to the American Revolution, because it really can't be a process that's happening now that LaRouche is now. So LaRouche is taking a comparison of what was happening then in 1923. actually a continuous process that's been happening at least since the American Revolution. As far as the British imperial attack, oligarchic attack on what the American Revolution represented as a development of civilization. And so, you know, I remember now, even World War One, was coming out of the whole Lincoln Revolution, the defeat of the empire system, especially the British naval power system, building the Transcontinental Railroad, and then that leading up into the development, the adoption of the Republican ideal in Russia, in Germany, in Japan, several places. Coming up out of this whole period, you have Germany as the industrial powerhouse of Europe. And so you have a war that's orchestrated by Britain. And coming out of the war, there's a clear intention not to help Germany, but instead, the Europeans, Russia, have been duped into thinking that it would be great for them to loot Germany, loot their own industrial powerhouse. And so, coming out of the Versailles Treaty, the conditions were basically, we're going to loot you. All you're going to do is you're going to export all your goods as far as these are the reparations. We're going to take your cattle. We're going to take your trains, your ships, anything that you can that would support your population. And on top of that, you're going to pay us. You're going to be solely responsible for reconstructing all of Europe. And so coming into this process, you have a right there already, you have already a setup for hyperinflation in the sense that not only are you saying, okay, well, you're not going to produce anything, but you're gonna have to provide enough money and products to pay us. But at the same time, they're saying, no, not only that, we're going to take production. You're going to go back to 1850s. Level of technology, and you still have to produce more than you did before to pay us. So right there, already at the treaty, you've already have a setup for hyperinflation, a real hyperinflation, not just in monetary value, but in the type of value that you see, or the type of process that you see represented by LaRouche's triple curve. Right, where you see money being printed, or at least like finances, or the effects of what seems like an economy increasing, but at the same time, your actual value, your actual standard of living is decreasing.
Yeah, also you have what you look at as the end process in Germany coming in 22 and 23. That as Leona went through, they were forced under the reparations agreements to be able to pay a certain amount of debt, and with this continually printing money in order to just meet the needs of the population inside the country, you have this eventual spiraling logarithmic, you know, exponential curve of money in circulation and devaluation of the mark. But that really is only a sort of a reflection, is a sense perceptual expression of what the guiding parameters of what the whole process was, which was first, as you went through, the intention to destroy the nation state of Germany, but also in a context to destroy the nation state system as a whole. And once you had once that was able to succeed, based on all the factors that went into World War One, and then after the post-war agreements, you essentially had what expressed was the inevitable outcome of putting a country in a position where they're continually collapsing their physical economy, So what you have is you have a curve. We have a curve which is a reflection of the fact that the physical parameters are breaking down. And you have a lot of interpretations you run into when you look at when you try to look into this history. You have many people who say it was only the internal financial policy of the Reichsbank that did this. You know, had they been more had they been able to willing to carry out their political agreement, you know, this never would have happened. That can mean two things. One side, that means, well, had they had the courage to enforce these austerity payments on their population, you know, this wouldn't have happened, sure. But they would have had to kill half their population, essentially, what that would have done. Or the other side, they say that it was simply the government, it was simply the government debt had nothing to do with the war reparations. And you get a lot of people who try to explain it simply as financial, there's a financial cost, without looking at how this thing was set up in the first place. What we really see throughout the process is an importance from the standpoint of the British oligarchy in making sure that if there's going to be anything left of Germany, anything left of their industry, it's going to be used for producing of Europe as a whole. And there's some quotes on this people can find later in the research. But you know, you have people who were saying this very fact that what we're going to do is not only are we going to destroy Germany, but the point is we're going to need to take over their industrial potential, because you can't just destroy Germany. You've got to loot Germany. You can't just destroy and blow up the industrial plants. You've got to keep those plants, but for your own usage. And some of this stuff is not as straightforward as I was saying it here. But you have, for instance, let me see. Maybe you're good to take a step back. But I'll just say, and then we can come back to it, that you have the, for instance, the Ruhr industrial region was occupied in the spring of 1921, and then you had, 1923, sorry, or January 1923, and you had agreements set up to continually, to continue the occupation of that region, turn it over completely to foreign control, but then use that industrial resource as payments to the rest of Europe. And it really demonstrates how an oligarchical system works. All it is a looting system. It's a looting process. You're not producing anything yourself as an economy. You're simply living off of others, and you know, you're looking at eating a country. Their country may have full employment. In the case of Germany, they had full employment for their population, but unemployment is not necessarily a bad thing in that sense. Full employment was a terrible thing in that sense.
Also, to bring back to the point that the main target of taking out the productive potential was actually the ability of the population to be a republic, which is that you take away the productive potential of a population, what are they doing? What are they actually occupying themselves with? So you take away their capability to invent, to experiment, to take the principles that a population discovers, an individual discovers, and implement them. And what you're really doing is destroying the capability to be a productive nation, which is really what's under attack now in the United States. Right? The most feared thing, the most feared reaction coming out of the empire system is what LaRouche is now posing, the HPPA, which is which is catching fire all across the country, which is this FDR reaction. That one snag in the British imperial policy is FDR, and that reaction is ingrained in the United States. This is why it's kind of the last target. But that's exactly what was being attacked in Germany at that time.
Yeah, if you look at it, what you really have, if you look as a comparison, you look at the United States of the past 30 years, and you look over Germany in the course of a few years, you really see a process which is parallel. That Germany there was intention to destroy the nation as part of also a whole operation earlier to remove that the United States trend that was happening in Russia as well. But part of that process was initially military defeat. After the military defeat in 1918, then you have these sanctions. One, the railroad taking away from them 90% of their merchant fleet, taken away from them, industrial factories. They have to supply trains, etc. That's the first part of the post-war sanctions. But then you have what you have then is they have to start paying a debt. That was but you ensure they can't pay that by the fact that you just took away their industrial potential. Then you start taking away regions like the Upper Silesia region that was taken away by the League of Nations after the Versailles Treaty. And you slowly continue to take away any ability to pay back a so-called debt that you set up over time, which then finally, as I mentioned, tipped off in 1923 in the spring with occupying the Ruhr region, which is some huge amount. I don't exactly right now. This is over half of the industrial potential of Germany, which means, or what they had at that point, which means there's no way that they could have produced anything to pay off the debt. At that point, they just go into free fall. We look at the United States today, and there's sort of a strange, sick irony in this thing, because here you have Germany. Here you have Germany be completely destroyed, and you open up a way for there to be what we're discussing here is the subject of the subject of the show today, hyperinflation, which is essentially that they had to continually their value, their mark became so that it's dropped into. Kept dropping from four to the dollar to four trillion. Was it trillion or million?
Yes, trillion.
Trillion.
Here.
4 trillion by November 7th of 1923, and now you look at the United States today. We have a process which, at the surface, it doesn't look exactly the same because. Well, wait a second. Where's the hyperinflation? Well, yeah, milk prices are going up, cheese is going up, dairy's going up, things like this. Some of it's involved because you've got this ethanol bubble that corn prices are being speculated on. So, to feed the cows and all these things is going up as well. But on the surface, it's not as bad as it was before. But the thing is, what we've had a financial bubble, speculation, which has kept the inflation out of the physical, out of the touching ground, so to speak, out of the physical economy through these huge financial instruments, which unfortunately is not going to be, or fortunately, I guess you could say on the other side, is not going to be able to be maintained. But we've done these things. We've done these things over time at the same time destroying our physical economy without the kind of conditions you had in Germany. They had to defeat them militarily. We were not defeated militarily here. We couldn't be defeated militarily here, which is why we had to take this course, why you say the financial oligarchs back in the, after FDR realized they had to take the course that they did here, which is we've now induced ourselves through believing in free trade, believing in money, believing that that an economy is simply a set of financial values. We've taken the course now over the past 30 years. We've willingly done what Germany had to be done, what Germany was forced to do by gunpoint, if you don't pay this debt, we're going to occupy the rural region. We're going to occupy your industrial area. And, so it's a similar, it's a similar process that we're now unfolding here, where we've had a bubble after bubble since the late 1960s, 70s, and now at the point where this housing bubble's blown out last July, we're at a point where the banks are having the only option they can take is this extreme measure of going for just pumping the system and just flooding the United States, which will continue, which will devalue our currency and destroy us as a nation. In in light of what's going on recently with this action by the Fed. But we're in a situation where the United States is not going has to stand up for our Constitution, because if we choose to go the way that is being pushed by Bernanke and the stimulus packages that unfortunately the presidential candidates are falling for, it's going to lead to measures which will force action upon this population, which is going to be in strict denial of the Constitution. Which is why people have to be very clear where we're headed here, because if we decide to go this way, they're going to be committing treason, etc. And people can also look in the latest issue of EIR. Helga Zepp LaRouche has published an article outlining how indeed the German government is accepting into the German Constitution parts of this unconstitutional Maastricht Treaty, which is going to enforce austerity upon their country. Now we got to make sure, we have to ask our questions in the United States: are we going to go the same way that we're going to allow actions to be carried out which are completely unconstitutional and destroy the republic? Or are we going to take this action now and as a sort of a last possible step to save the United States, defend the dollar, the statement that people can find on LaRouchePact.com, how to defend the dollar, put certain restrictions on what the interest rates are going to be used for, etc. Mainly the housing crisis, which I think maybe we can go into a little bit more here.
Yes, let me ask you, Michael and Leona, this is one place where Megan could go into perhaps the reactions to the LaRouche Political Action Committee and LIM organizing around the country on bringing out this danger you're discussing and the delusions that you encounter. And also, I'll just say, Robert from California has sent in a couple emails asking about to what degree is any of this grasped in Congress or state legislatures. I think Megan's comments on that will answer that, Robert.
Okay, yeah, let me just begin by saying that the intensive organizing that the LaRouche Political Action Committee, especially the LaRouche Youth Movement, have been doing since August, but I especially want to pinpoint since the beginning of January of this year, to pass through Congress LaRouche's Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, absolutely demonstrates that the principle of the American Revolution is not dead in the United States. And I think it's important to realize this, because the specter of the possibility of a return to a Franklin Roosevelt policy in the United States scares the pants off of the financiers that are pushing this hyperinflationary attack on the United States. And there's been a really incredible intensification since the beginning of January in breakthroughs with the HBPA. And I'll just go through some of that. For example, there's a resolution in the Pennsylvania State House headed up by State Representative Harold James, House Resolution 418, calling on Congress to enact the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. Before the new year, it had something between 25 to 28 cities around Pennsylvania endorsed Harold James's resolution. Now it's over 35. We've had major cities across the United States, including Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Providence, Rhode Island, St. Louis, Missouri, Flint, Michigan, Port Isabel, Texas, and at least 2 to 3 more cities in Pennsylvania. Hazleton is one of them. All call for the enactment of the HBPA, and most of those that I named were just this week. So you really have a tidal wave sweeping the nation. There's, since the beginning of the new year, there have been bills of support for the HBPA introduced into the New Hampshire State House, the Rhode Island State House, the Mississippi State House, the Missouri State House, and several others are considering it. Now, just to sort of emphasize, the absolute necessity for the enactment of this firewall legislation. There was an event today that happened in Massachusetts in the congressional district of Congressman Stephen Lynch. Congressman Lynch held a foreclosures workshop for his constituents. His district covers the southeastern part of Massachusetts. Now, Congressman Lynch had prepared and expected about 100 people or less to show up. 250 people came to this event on foreclosures, desperate to try to do something to stop, to keep themselves from losing their home. The congressman gave a speech, but the point is that we had, the LaRouche PAC had organizers there. We were able to get literature to every single person inside discussing LaRouche's economic policies and also his proposals for reorganizing the banking system. And what we found is that these 250 people left the event completely dissatisfied, or probably more accurately, frightened about not having a prospect to really save their home. And we were waiting outside to organize them and got an absolutely incredible response. We met at least 10 people from the city of Brockton, which is currently considering the HBPA, many of whom pledged to come to the next city council meeting with us. And this kind of phenomenon is happening across the country. We got 6 constituents to attend the recent city council meeting in Richmond, California. We're organizing on campuses to get young people to come with us to the city council meetings. And so I think that we're really on the verge of a breakthrough. The HBPA is recognized everywhere. People, mayors and elected officials that we've not spoken to directly know about it. And this was exemplified in Washington, D.C., at a press conference that was held at an event there. The conference, what's it called, the Conference of Mayors?
U.S. Conference of Mayors. I think there were over 200. Yeah, it's the annual meeting.
Mm-hmm. Over 200 mayors were in attendance, and the LaRouche PAC was there organizing. Now, at a press conference that occurred, I think it was on the second day of the event, it was chaired by the mayor of Trenton. His name's Palmer, I believe. And a LaRouche PAC organizer, Paul Gallagher, asked a question about the HBPA, at which point Palmer tried to divert and not really address the issue, when the mayor of Honolulu, who was up on the podium with Palmer, interrupted, asked for a description of the HBPA. This was backed in, you had two mayors from Michigan cities nodding in agreement that this was absolutely pertinent to the organization. And after Paul Gallagher went through the HBPA, Mayor Palmer had to admit that he knew about the HBPA, that LaRouche was doing this, and he knew that it had passed in Newark, New Jersey, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So I think that we're really on the verge of absolutely breaking down the floodgates and really resurging through the nation with a demand for a return to FDR.
Right. Let me ask you one thing, although Michael and Leona, please draw any point out here. But one thing that I understand, Megan, from central Pennsylvania, some of the typical kind of response I've heard, say that's often a Republican area, and one city councilman, when briefed by the LPAC organizer about this German, the Weimar period hyperinflation, said, "Oh, my God, you're saying that's going to be today. Well, that's what led to Hitler." Do you find people make are they able to react and understand some of history or see the current process? That's growing, too, besides sheer knowledge of the HBPA being out there.
Yeah, I think there's an absolute sense. Well, let me put it this way. The idea that this is merely a subprime crisis has this fantasy, this delusion dropped away at least 1 or 2 months ago, it generally in the population. People are clear and can sense in a very scary way that this is much, much larger than anything they've probably experienced in their lifetimes. And people are frightened. And you do get a mix of levels of people's understanding. For example, we talked to a mayor of a small Texas city who told us, "Look, there's one bank in my town that handles everything, payrolls, savings accounts, retirement funds. If this bank goes under, my town's going to be wiped out." And we're absolutely seeing this more and more. What's lacking is knowledge of what to do. People are scared. People sense the magnitude of what's hitting us. People don't know what to do. And this is largely attributed to exactly what Michael and Leona referenced, that the past 30 years' policies of the United States and the axioms governing them have been the complete opposite of the Franklin Roosevelt policy.
Let me ask any one of you on this point about what can be done. Many of our people listening right today, again, this is January 26, 2008. This is the LaRouche Show on Hyperinflation Has Struck. But on the question of how to defend your dollar and what to do about it, Michael and Leona, you've been discussing maybe the latest LaRouche, what he's called this morning. He's down in Texas, by the way. He gave an address to the LaRouche Youth Movement weekend cadre school event down there. But LaRouche said, I've added something to the HBPA. I'm spelling out about the two-tier interest rates, how you can intervene in your economy, and you can penalize the speculative flows, but you can create low interest for what ought to be going on to save the sectors, like the productive banking sector. Do you want to say anything about that or what you have in the works or what to bring out about it? I think you're still there, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think you're on mute, though.
Oh. We just have a technical connection. I think.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, very good. That's good. Thanks.
Oh. Are you talking about, you're saying how we want to rebuild the United States, huh?
Yeah. I was also saying, when, like, the person in Texas who said, oh, my God, we only have one bank, and that's at stake. But this proposal of LaRouche for the differential, he calls it two-tier U.S. Treasury policy of how you would utter currency, how you would set interest rates. Do you want to say something about that?
Oh, I haven't looked at it too closely, no. I'm not sure. I didn't look at the I'm not really quite – I haven't studied it up yet. I wouldn't want to say exactly what he's talking about there.
Right.
But more generally, I mean, the point is that the United States can regulate anything that they want to. And the idea that, well, if some institution has more money, then why don't they have the right to, why don't they have the power? As Felix Rowatin, one of our organizers had cornered Felix Rowatin in an event recently. And this is what he said, FDR is the old time. That was done before. But now, one of these so-called nation states, they don't have as much money as we do, so we should take over. Well, that's bunk. And what is the policy, it is the constitutional nature of the United States, is that we, at any time, in any crisis, have the right to come in, intervene, set up regulations. We had regulations set up like that under FDR, and these regulations, like the Glass-Steagall Act and others, were slowly taking away year by year and allowed for speculation to occur, speculation on different offshore instruments, basically things that are not directly managed by the government, huge financial flows. Certain things like the oil crisis in the 70s, you had then Greenspan setting of derivatives in the late 80s, and the whole time we've lost the sense that the Constitution allows for regulation of the banking sector, and that there be essentially, look, the physical economy is a lot more important than these financial measures, and Sometimes people get caught up. Sometimes I think people get caught up in trying to explain things in the terms of the financial institutions. Now, there is a role of financial institutions, and as LaRouche himself is talking about, this very precise, specific things, the two-tiered interest rate, as he's talking about, I haven't studied, but there needs to be detailed. But you won't be able to discuss the details in any competent way unless you're understanding that the banking system, as it was first set up by Hamilton, is only a way of describing, as equations in mathematics are simply ways of describing and organizing and basically coordinating something much more important, which is the fact that human beings, you know, unlike a pack of wolves, like it's the oligarchy resemble, very cunning wolves that, you know, hunt down and jump on their prey in a fashion that is coordinated. You know, they know what they're doing. But we, unlike those creatures, have a purpose here in the universe, as existence, to use our minds. Now, in the usage of our minds, we can organize ourselves differently. We can build cities. We can build bridges. We can conquer the land and sea, even space. And to do that, we form nations. We form these are nations which have the sovereign cultures and form relations among those nations for the good of the people. Now, if you don't start from that, and instead you start from, well, you know, how are you going to deal with this debt here, you know? I mean, really, how are you going to deal with this thing? Don't you realize that the government's not working right now and we've got a lot more money? You know, that's what Bloomberg sounds like. And, you know, we can build these infrastructure projects. There's certain things that the government just doesn't have the courage to do, and we do. And don't you realize right now this? Well, for one thing, there are this financial capital. He's lying. But on the other side, the government has the power to regulate and set up any kinds of measures necessitating the physical development, physical economy of its people. I mean, that's the number one thing right now. And the question is, the challenge is, how do we really get this across? We know we've got a population that is thriving for the HPPA, as Megan went through. People are in a Franklin Roosevelt spirit. And we've got presidential campaigns out there which are not laying out the crisis and the magnitude that needs to be, but also not calling for the kinds of measures emergency measures to be taken on the financial side, because I think they're not clear on what the role of an economy is in terms of the physical economy's relation to the financial system. That's why I say people who are listening, people who are going to be organizing out in the street, and people who are going to be organizing financial institutions should pay very close attention to what's going to be coming out in LPAC of this project, this LPAC feature on what's going on with the United States economy, what happened in Germany, as we'll be illustrating very clearly what this relationship is of how an economy functions in terms of the relationship of the physical economy to the financial system. So I think those are some of the key points that people need to get, and I think we've got to figure out, and people who are organized have to be clear on what's the key difference in a physical economy versus basically, you know, a bunch of animals who are trying to beat each other up. I mean, that's really what you got up there with the kind of intention that you've got. People like Roatan and Felix Roatan, for those who don't know who I'm referring to. Felix Roatan is the guy I was talking about earlier.
Right, and I understand. I mean, underscoring what you say about the physical economy, one of the cartoons, I guess, that was commissioned, I saw it today, shows several different boxes of a family sitting down, and the size of their turkey on the table disappears down to nothing, a few bones, and then you see them throwing paper currency, their dollar bills, in the grate of the fireside in order to heat their house. In other words, it was very physical. That's part of your package?
Yeah, well, a big point to make about this idea of the physical economy is that it's not just as LaRouche has pointed out in his last paper, it's not just you're producing products, but that what you're producing is the capacity of the population to increase their capability to provide for more people in the population. And so, that cartoon is actually very... It's good at getting across what exactly happened, which is, you know, they had austerity policies. They had policies where, in Germany, they had policies that were forced upon them to create a poorer population, essentially. But to really make the point, you have, at this point right now, a similar disintegration in ability to create anything, ability to produce, in the sense that we've lost a lot of, so still in the process of completely falling out of the ability to understand what it takes to increase the technological capability of the population, the ability to experiment and to create new sciences in the population. And that's really where the role of physical economy comes in, and what actually is the substance of your physical economy is this creative capability of the population.
Yeah, I think that's a very important thing that she brought up, because you had in Germany, you know, they kept taking away the ability for them to produce anything. And as the cartoon shows, you know, they were having to produce for other countries. They were having to ship out everything to other countries. And so there was, even though people were fully employed, as I mentioned earlier, but people, there became less and less and less for their population to consume. But look at today. I mean, we've done the same thing. We've been able to produce. And the difference is we've covered it up with globalization. We've covered it up with living off of cheap goods from abroad. And we've slowly, you know, we've taken down our industries. The last few years we've lost the last potential to rebuild the United States with the collapse of the auto sector.
And the difference is when they were in the picture, it shows them were very sad. They were crying when this happened. If you look at the pictures of our own, the demolition of our own country, of our, the organs of our country, the auto sector, nuclear power plants and such, you'll actually see people outside cheering. You'll actually see people with peace signs and such outside of the demolition supporting and campaigning for this type of activity. So in that context, you can see the insanity of the culture that's the degeneration of the culture.
Right, the delusion, the deep delusion. Do you want to say something on this, Megan? No. Right, and one thing
because
I wanted to ask.
Say they had a radioactive stupidity, you know.
I can get it at Walmart. Oh, excuse me. But one thing I wanted to ask, if anyone wants to throw in here, Megan was reporting on developments in city council, state legislatures, and this reflects onto Capitol Hill, the changed environment in the country. Just since New Year, we're only 3 weeks into 2008, and part of the whole so-called Christmas holiday period, but also like Texas this weekend, Cadre School by the LaRouche Youth Movement, Seattle the weekend before. What about the question of the uptake on the or the reaction among youth, besides some of the older types in state capitals and elsewhere, of what has to be done? I mean, what do you say about this?
Well, I can say one thing, and maybe Leona and Michael want to add to this with some of the work that they're doing. But what has really come to predominate the youth mental life, especially since, I could pinpoint, especially since probably the last presidential campaign in 2004, is the real predominance of an internet culture, which of course we had before. But on the campuses, what you'll find these days is that with the facing terrible worsening economic conditions, facing the persistence of a pretty evil administration and the stupidest president in world history, youth have been retreating more and more into the ever more available virtual culture of MySpace, Facebook. You even have presidential debates being hosted on MySpace and Facebook, and I don't know if anybody participated, youth, but The point is that you have a real demoralization amongst the youth generation. And the LaRouche Youth Movement wrote and printed up a pamphlet called Is the Devil on Your Laptop in mid-December of 2007, which we just got a chance to get onto the campuses before the winter break and have now, again, just been able to begin to flood the campuses again as they come back into session, attacking the real roots of this virtual culture. And what we're finding on the campuses now is that youth are very confused about the presidential race. They're very demoralized about their future. But by attacking this virtual culture, what we're finding is that youth actually become freed. They become liberated and get into an actual debate over the nature of creativity, for example. And in the recent weeks on the campuses, we've been deploying with this sort of dual flank of the devil on your laptop, while at the same time educating people on LaRouche's fundamental economic ideas with our arsenal of 1 million pamphlets that we're aiming to get out by the February 5th primary, at or around that time. So, and I think it's indicative that at the Seattle Cadre School, we have some youth up there that are interested in joining full time or in organizing with us full or part time. And this phenomenon is beginning to happen around the country. So I think the more that we hit the campuses with the pairing of the devil in your laptop pamphlet, challenging kids to get out of the virtual world and back into reality while educating them on what's actually happening with the hyperinflation and what they need to be doing about it with us. I think as we continue to do this over the next days and weeks, I think we're poised to see a pretty incredible response.
And I would just add to that that I think if people look also at that pamphlet, Devil in Your Laptop, there's a part of the feature which discusses the difference between the world of the internet culture, the digital world, and the principle, how the mind really makes a scientific discovery, and how it is that principles manifest themselves in physical processes. In an article, I think, What is a Human Being by Sky Shields, because it really gets down to the same root problem with economics of people who are visualizing the economy as sort of a digital process. This thing is a machine that has no will. It's happening, you know, electronically. It's the market. There's no person behind it. There's no one regulating it. You can't talk about who's guiding this process. There is nobody guiding the process. Whereas real economics happens through decisions of human beings. Real history happens through decisions of human beings. And so the people who are listening to this, I mean, it's happening because of the decisions that you are making. And whether or not you will to change the direction, the course of the country, is really going to be determine the potential to change the course of the country. And those decisions that we make and the capabilities we're going to be able to set in place through our actions are going to guide a process. And the economy works the same way. The economy works not only based on what decisions we decide to make, what kind of institutions we set up as a society, but also based on what discoveries of principle we've made and implemented into our economy as a whole. As we've been discussing today, those are rapidly deteriorating. But the idea of an analog process versus a digital, and in fact us creating awareness into the political institutions of government today that they've got to be the analog, you could say. The digital, the machine is going out of whack. In fact, maybe what's happened is that the minds of Ben Bernanke, maybe Ben Bernanke has actually been programmed to be a computer and work on ones and zeros.
He's set to go on Tuesday, you know.
What's that?
He's set to go on Tuesday. He's supposed to announce new stimulating low interest rates.
Yeah, who would have? I didn't know. Think it was possible for computers to have sex. I don't know. It's open to speculation.
Good
and he wouldn't mind the speculation from that one, I guess. Maybe computers get off on speculation because they have to do so many calculations or something.
Overheat.
Yeah, maybe they overheat. Yeah, that's the way. That's the way they get off. So that's the big question for the day. So yeah, the question is: do you want to have? do you want to be guided by computers that are having are being sexually stimulated, or by human minds making decisions?
Well, one thing that Megan mentioned in passing, and it relates to what you're just saying, Michael, about people getting smarter. I mean genuinely, not in the virtual world. And it's been this business of being taken in by the line that it was just predators who induced people to take bad loans, or it was just subprime loans. There's the current version of that is this fairy tale that it was just this lone single trader, day trader over in Paris in Societe Generale, that he made $7 billion worth of bad trades last year, and it wasn't anything to do with the system. But do you want to say something either about youth looking at how you really think or people getting smarter at large?
Yeah, I can say one thing about the responsibility that LaRouche has charged his youth movement and every other human out there with, that right now, as has been discussed throughout this hour, there's an absolute necessity not just to make some mechanical financial change, right, this stimulus package ain't going to work, but the point is that there has to be a fundamental decision to change the axioms upon which society is governing itself. And LaRouche has demonstrated time and time again what is a human being, that a human's not a beast. And this is what our responsibility now is, to be able to communicate to the population the a real sense of cultural depth going back at least 2,000 to 3,000 years of the nature of the battle that's being fought right now. That the battle embodied in the American Revolution to form a government which is based on a conception that man is a creative being, and that man is not just subject to some law of the jungle, that's the battle that's being fought right now, and that we can absolutely will changes in United States policy. Nobody is threatening, nobody is forcing us militarily from the outside to accept these insane hyperinflationary policies. And so we have to communicate to people a sense of the magnitude of the battle that we're involved in right now, and to get them to come to bear on the Congress. You know, we have to give the Congress a sense that there's a real political lynch mob out there for them, and that they have to enact the HBPA as a first step for a general banking reorganization.
Absolutely. And you mentioned just since New Year's, I think some 30 legislatures are in session now. Mm-hmm. People are listening to this program or otherwise following on the internet or in direct contact. Still more, I mean, the final ones are opening up. I think Oklahoma next week, you name it. But as you say, there's no limitations except the understanding and changing of outlook and axioms and how to think, because it can be done. LaRouche was saying this morning in Houston, I'll just pass along, the enemy leadership we're up against now is stupid. They may be powerful, but they're dumb. They are. So it's all open for us. I'm going to mention again, especially those who listen later by telephone during the week, 1-800-929-7566. 1-800-929-7566. Because this package that's been described on the real historical analog, the real situation we face today and what we can do about it in the way of the epic breakdown we face, but on the other hand, the defense of our nation and humanity and nations around the world. You can look on www.larouchepub.com, LaRouchePub.com, for the package that's coming out soon, and certainly on LaRouche Political Action Committee, LaRouchePAC.com. So, Michael or Leona, you might have the final concluding words, if you wish. if they're still connected. I think you are.
There you go. Let's go for it. Let's save the United States and the world.
Right. And
this is the whole world's at stake. You know, sometimes it takes priority over other things.
You can't be too busy for that one. Thank you. This has been the LaRouche Show, January 26, 2008. Hyperinflation is here, this economic breakdown, and what to understand and what to do about it. Thank you very much, Michael, Leona, and Megan Beetz. And be sure to listen Saturday 3 to 4, February 2nd, Harley Schlanger, and we'll continue in follow-up. Thank you very much.